Extreme couponers have their own culture and their own language. Blinky, CAT, CRT, ECB, Peely's, Q, UPC. Today we will decode the culture of couponers. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Mary Potter Kenyon got hooked on coupons when she was just 10 years old and sent away for a free Super Bowl. Today, she's a coupon queen who shares her skill and knowledge with shoppers and retailers. I'll talk with her about her new book, Coupon Crazy, The Science, The Savings, and the Stories Behind America's Extreme Obsession. Then later in the hour, marketing expert John Murray will be here to help us understand the allure of warehouse shopping. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Stores and manufacturers really want you to buy their products, and they will try almost anything to get you to do what they want. Today, we're going to talk about some of the ways we are manipulated as shoppers, and we'll also get a peek into the world of expert shoppers who make the system work for them. First, extreme couponing. My guest is Mary Potter Kenyon. She lives in Manchester, Iowa, and writes a weekly couponing column for the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. She has just published a book called Coupon Crazy, The Science, The Savings, and the Stories Behind America's Extreme Obsession. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Charity. It's nice to be here.
Well, thank you so much for coming. And tell me your story. When did you first start using coupons?
Well, sometimes I say I started when I was 10 years old because, like every avid reader, as a child, I used to sit and read anything within eating distance, I should say, because at breakfast I would read the boxes of the cereal, and there was a Cheerios box that had on the back an offer for a Super Bowl if you sent in labels from the Cheerios box. So, of course, I wanted that Super Bowl. I wanted something free, but also to get my mother to buy Cheerios instead of making the oatmeal or the fried potatoes or whatever it was, I would clip out the coupons in the Sunday paper for the Cheerios. So I would give her the coupon, and that made it more likely that she would pick up a box of Cheerios. So I didn't really get into it deeply until I got married in 1979.
But I have to say, with that Super Bowl, you didn't just get one Super Bowl.
No, I got one for each of my 9 siblings. And so I was going through my mother's cabinets and collecting all these labels. So no, I didn't get just one. I got 9. But when I got married in 1979, as a college student at UNI, of course, the budget was tight. So I started clipping coupons seriously then. And the rest is history, because I've been using coupons for over 30 years now.
And you describe some of your early efforts in collecting coupons, but also the culture was a little bit different then. The offers were a little bit different then. You not only clipped coupons, you also did something called refunding. What is that?
Yes, people today don't understand the mindset of people who were like me, who were collecting all our box tops and our box bottoms, like the Cheerios box. And because manufacturers used to have a lot of offers, sometimes as many as 800 new offers a month, for if you sent in the labels, you could get free T-shirts, you could get stuffed animals, you could get $1 back, $2 back, sometimes even $10 back. So I was saving my labels. And
not just your labels.
Not just my labels, but my mother's coffee can lids, because like Folgers would have an offer for a free coffee maker. And so I would save these labels, and I would send one to me, send one to her, maybe one to my sister. So it was a whole culture for me. And for my family, we lived in Cedar Falls, and I would have these toddlers following me down the alleys of Cedar Falls, and we would stop at the diaper boxes and peel off their labels, and we would, in other words, we were going down the alleys to collect trash, and we would go to the swimming pool and dig in the garbage for the Hershey wrappers, because every year, for year after year, Hershey's provided my family with free T-shirts, and most of those candy bars were not eaten by my family. So this was this whole lifestyle from my children and I, and my husband and I would go to the recycling center and dig out not just the coupons, but also he would flip out the Tide boxes out of the recycling center bin, and I'd peel off the label, and then we'd put it back, and the jugs of detergent we'd take home, and we'd put in the bathtub, and there would be like 10 jugs of detergent sitting there, empty jugs, floating in the bathtub so that those labels would soften, and then I, you know, there was this whole science to this kind of thing.
And but you had a whole room in your house devoted to this,
I had an office that had shelves and filing cabinets and an entire office that was devoted to that hobby.
Well, give me an idea of how much, and not just with the refunding, but how much money you could save. Let's talk about a great grocery store trip for you, or maybe a typical grocery store trip for you. How much could you save?
Typical is not as impressive of what you see on TV.
Right.
Because here in Iowa, we don't have double couponing. So you can't do those $1,000 trips where you're getting things for $25. But you can do mini sprees in Iowa. So I might go into a Walgreens, and if you plan your shopping trip right, you might get the razors and the shampoo and whatever it is that week. And with your coupons, you might walk out of the store without having paid but a few pennies. And there have been the few and far between. Kmart, when they started double coupon a few years ago, they actually let you double 75 coupons up to $2. So my husband and I would go into the Kmart. We'd each have a cart, and we would get over $200 worth of stuff for around $25. So I've done those mini sprees or those double sprees a little bit. But my average savings might only be $10, $12. That's not real impressive. But if I do a planned trip or I go out of town, because I live in a small town where there's just a little grocery store and a Walmart, then I might $30, $40, $50 savings. But especially with the health and beauty products, because that's the strategic shopping you can do with your coupons and with the like Catalina Rewards and that kind of thing.
Catalina Rewards
are the little pieces of paper that come out of a machine next to your, when you're checking out, next to the register. And a lot of people just crumple them up and throw them in the garbage. But if you start looking at them, there's more than just tire rotation and oil changes. Sometimes there'll be like $2 back on your next trip, $5 back on your next shopping trip. And so those are like at Walgreens, Hy-Vee, that kind of, those stores have those Catalina Rewards. Mm-hmm. So you plan these strategies to get more for your buck.
Well, and you did some calculations in your book that give us an idea of over time. And one of the calculations you made was thinking about toothpaste and shampoo and that kind of thing. Can you break it down for us a little bit? Try to compare what most of us spend and what you would have spent.
I had figured out, and probably for 30 years, I never spent more than a dime on a box of toothpaste. Well, unfortunately, prices have gone up and the coupon amounts are going down. So now it's a quarter. I might actually spend a quarter on toothpaste. But I figured, I did the math, and I figured that I might have spent $72 on toothpaste in 30 years for a family of eight. Well, eight children.
Right. So a family of 10.
Right. Compared to what? Hundreds of dollars that another person might have spent. So, and I've heard people say, oh, it's just pennies. You know, but there's been weeks that it's 3,000 pennies that I save. Or, you know, so 4,000 pennies. So, yeah, it's just pennies, but it adds up.
Was it a significant part of your family income, did you feel, using these coupons?
It was kind of like my job. For all those years when my husband was the one worker outside of the home and I was home with how many kids, I would use this because back then I could get $100 a month back in refunds. You can't do that now. And then if you looked at the savings, the strategic savings, then yes, it was an income of savings.
Now, one of the, I'm not a couponer, but one of the things, it's not that I dislike them, it's that I just never seem to be organized enough to use them. But one of the things that I feel when I get those Catalina coupons at the register, I feel like I'm being manipulated. And if I buy into this, then I'm going to buy stuff that I wouldn't normally actually purchase. So how do you defend against that, or do you?
Well, in one way, you are being manipulated, because if you get that Catalina coupon out of that machine, you have to come back within 2 weeks, and you have to spend it there. But you can also take it and go out to your car and put your bag in the car and go back in, and you can spend it right then. Well, some of them, like Kmart, it's different. You have to wait for next week. But Walgreens, Hy-Vee, those Catalina coupons. And I lived like that. I would go back into the store, and then I would get toilet paper or eggs or milk, you know, because you're going to use those things. So I kind of manipulated the manipulation, so to speak. So, but also, I do have, as I did this book, as I wrote this book and interviewed people and looked into the, like, coupon fraud and looked into, because when we say it's just pennies of savings, there's millions of dollars of fraud involved in some of this in couponing, and there was in refunding, too. I guess anything that involves money ends up with that fraudulent part of it, that you have to look at that. I started to, I wouldn't say dislike coupons, because I write a couponing column and I teach couponing workshops, so I better not dislike coupons. But I started to pull back from some of that because, well, time is a factor, of course, for all of us. And I was shopping too much. I will admit that it was like a high I got from shopping and from saving money. And sure, I would walk out with 10 bags of basically free stuff sometimes and then come home and have to find a place to put them. So it can get to where it's bordering on hoarding, too. Right.
Well, and
so I started looking at that, too.
People who, they will, if they can get free cat treats, they'll take free cat treats even if they don't have a cat.
Yes, yes. And I had to admit through the writing of this book that I myself had a little bit of a problem, an obsession, and that's what the book is about, is an obsession. But was it a healthy obsession? Was it healthy of me to take my children through the alleys of Cedar Falls as a fun time and be peeling labels off? Well, it probably didn't hurt them, and it makes them look at things differently when it would be hard for them to spend waste money, I would say, on their groceries and their. But I don't. My kids don't use coupons, and I've got 5 adults outside of their home now. And some people say, well, they don't need to use coupons, Mary. You give them baskets full of health and beauty stuff at Christmas time. And I do. I feel, as I'm picking up these razors and these shaving cream and the deodorant shampoo, I'm setting it aside. If it's free or cost me a quarter, I'll set aside some of that extra for them. So they really don't need to use coupons because Mom does a lot of that shopping for them. But, you know, I did have to look at, where do you draw the line where it's hoarding? If you're bringing, you know, 50 boxes of macaroni into your house and you're only going to go through 20 of them, yes, you can donate some of it. And so, but I did pull back a little bit and look at it through. When I interviewed these people, I started looking through it, looking at my own obsession through the lens of this microscope, and it wasn't always pretty.
Interesting. Uh-huh. Very interesting. How long would you say you spend every week working on coupons?
Now, since my husband passed away last year and one of my sons had moved out and it was only 3 girls and I, not as much as I used to. I used to probably spend 20 hours at this, as the clipping the coupons, the shopping, the back when it was refunding too, because it used to be if you were a couponer, there was a good chance you were also a refunder and you were saving those labels. I used to spend at least 20 hours a week at it.
So really a part-time job.
It was a part-time job. And now I might spend 2 hours just kind of organizing my grocery list, clipping the coupons. I file the coupons maybe when I'm watching TV or somebody else is driving the vehicle, and I'll, you know, so I don't spend a lot of time at it. I'm not saving as much, but I'm not spending as much either.
Right. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Mary Potter Kenyon. She is the author of Coupon Crazy, The Science, The Savings, and The Stories Behind America's Extreme Obsession. Are you a couponer? Share your experience with us. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about different ways that stores and manufacturers try to manipulate us. And right now we're talking about the people who try to manipulate right back. We're talking about coupon users. And my guest is Mary Potter Kenyon. She is the author of Coupon Crazy, The Science, The Savings, and The Stories Behind America's Extreme Obsession. She also writes a couponing column for the Dubuque Telegraph Herald and lives in Manchester, Iowa. And give us just a brief history of coupons. When did they first start showing up?
The first coupon was in the 1880s, and it was a coupon for a free glass of Coca-Cola back when they were selling like 9 glasses a day. This is when it was still in glasses. So some man who was running a Coca-Cola store started giving out free coupons, thinking maybe he would get people more interested in Coca-Cola. Well, obviously that worked. So that was the first coupon. That was in the 1880s. And then cereal companies were soon to follow. And the first cereal coupon was a Grape Nuts coupon for 1 cent. So it's been around that long.
Wow. And what do you cite some examples of how businesses that try to do away with coupons find themselves in trouble. What do businesses really get out of coupons?
There's some manufacturers who hate coupons, but it works and they know they have to participate in them. Procter & Gamble is a company that hates coupons, and they put out, sometimes 2 inserts a month. So they're still using them, but they did try to pull back on the coupons and people got angry. People got upset. They started in New York area and decreased the amount of coupons that they were putting out, and people were up in arms about, this is something we count on and we're just going to go and buy some other company's products. And that's what started to happen, is their sales were falling off, and so they saw that they had to put them back in. But there's a lot of people who say this is like dinosaur age. These are little pieces of paper that just a select few people are using, because it's only 3% of our coupons every Sunday are actually used.
Wow.
So that's a small percentage. If more people start using coupons, which is what happened when the TLC Extreme Couponing Show came on, is more people started getting into this, and all of a sudden more coupons were being used. And then we saw manufacturers pull back and make the amounts of coupons a little bit less, or you had to buy 2 products to use the coupon, or it was going to be 75 cents instead of a dollar. Like I said about the toothpaste before, it mm-hmm. used to always be a dollar off this, a dollar off Crest, a dollar off Colgate. And then with more people using coupons, all of a sudden you were seeing 75 cents off Colgate, or 50 cents off Colgate, So they don't actually intend for everybody to use those coupons. And so that's become, the whole world of couponing has changed since that program was popular.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, and you mentioned getting your toothpaste for pennies. You're strategic. So mm-hmm. you have that manufacturer's coupon for, in the good old days, for mm-hmm. a dollar off. And then you would go to the store on a double coupon day? Or how do you make the most of that?
So when my husband and I were digging in these recycling centers for coupon inserts, I might come up with 20 $1 coupons off Colgate, or even 30, 40. So when I would wait for a sale, and then the toothpaste would go on sale for a dollar. So then I get 30 tubes
okay.
for free. So like I said, there is not very many double
coupons. Right, and a lot of coupons now say limit 2 per customer.
Yes, unfortunately, that's something else Procter & Gamble did also. They have I saw that in October of – that was the first time I saw it. I think it was October of 2012 or 2011. I saw the Procter & Gamble coupons all of a sudden set on the bottom, limit 4 each coupon. And that was something totally new in the world of couponing. All of a sudden, they were limiting us. In fact, it's also said not to be used for products for resale. So not only were they telling us we could only use 4 of their coupon at a time, but we couldn't get any of that stuff to resell, because mm-hmm. that's what some couponers, avid couponers, do, is they get so much stuff free is they start selling it at their garage sales. I am one of them. I used to do that, and then I stopped doing that. But yes, and Target stores, they put a limit 4 of like coupons, and mm-hmm. their register won't accept more. You can use 4 Colgate coupons, and then the 5th one will beep and they won't take it. So yes, there are now being limits put on our couponing, and there was never limits before.
Interesting. And how has the digital world changed couponing?
Now, instead of the old lady in the checkout in front of you pulling out her little coupon box, she might be pulling out her phone. Or she might have printed off coupons on her printer. When the internet printed coupons first came out in like 92, 93, there was unlimited amount. You could print out 50 of one coupon. And then, of course, the fraud came in again, and people were working these coupons to change the amount. So instead of $2 off something, it might say $8.99 off a product, and you'd end up getting it free. So all the stores all over the nation had to stop taking internet printed coupons because they weren't being reimbursed for these fake coupons. So now it's limited. And it's these coupons you print out of your printer actually have little numbers and codes on, so that the company can find out what computer address those coupons came from. So we're limited usually to print out 2. So it's a changing world.
Interesting. Well, let's go to the phones. We have some people who want to get in on this conversation. I'm talking with Mary Potter Kenyon. She's the author of Coupon Crazy, The Science, The Savings, and the Stories Behind America's Extreme Obsession. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100 or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Allie is on the line in Indianola. Hi, Allie.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I was just wondering about brands. I get coupons in the mail. I get the Hy-Vee coupon book, and I go through it, but then I go to the store, and the off-brand, even with the coupon, are cheaper than buying the brand name with the coupon. And so I was just wondering if it's worth getting the brand name, if there's a big difference, or if you should just go with the cheaper one.
That's a good question. Now, with the store coupons, you say you get like a Hy-Vee ad.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll see the Hy-Vee ad has a store coupon, and it says right up there store coupon or Hy-Vee coupon. You can combine that savings with your manufacturer coupon savings. There's almost every store that I know of, Fairway, Hy-Vee, whatever, which means kind of double savings for you. So if it's a dollar off something at with the Hy-Vee coupon and you have a dollar coupon off, that's the way you use your strategy to maybe you're going to get $2 off that item. So, okay. But we don't want to use coupons just for the sake of using coupons. In other words, I tell people, don't clip out your coupons for Totino's frozen pizzas and feed your kids Totino's frozen pizzas because you're getting them for 49 cents with your coupons. You're going to want to maybe look at the product. If it's maybe 5 cents difference, you know, go ahead and go with the brand name with the coupons. But no, you don't want to use a coupon just to use a coupon. But that's one of the biggest strategies, is looking at those store coupons and then seeing, do I have a manufacturer coupon for that too? Because I can use both on one item. But it has to be a store coupon and a manufacturer. You can't use two manufacturer coupons on one item.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Allie. And that's where the strategy and the organization comes into play, which most of us do not have the wherewithal to put all of that together, I don't think. And you also have looked at who uses coupons and who does.
And it wouldn't be who you think, because when I started writing this book, I thought, okay, I came from a history of poverty. My family was poor, so maybe it's the people who grew up with that who would be using coupons. And I was wrong. I ended up interviewing a woman who makes $500,000 a year who uses coupons just because she enjoys the practice. I interviewed a construction worker who on his break would run to Walgreens to get his razors and his shampoo with coupons. The average couponer makes $70,000 a year. So it is, the average couponer is a college graduate. So it isn't who you would necessarily think who uses coupons.
What do you think that says about coupons?
Well, that's what I wanted to find out. I wanted to find out what's in these minds of these people who choose, who get kind of obsessed with this stuff. And was it because I like free stuff so much that I ended up using coupons? And that's part of it. And it's a part of feeling smarter than everybody else. It's a part of, if you're using coupons and the average person isn't using coupons, you're the one getting the sale. They're not getting that special sale. So, it's a mixture of all of this. One man I interviewed said he was convinced that it's because he has ADD that he gets so excited about coupons, because he puts all of his energies and all of his attention into the using the coupons, and it becomes a game for him. But, you know, there was just so many different people. It's like homeschooling. I homeschool, and you can't pigeonhole homeschoolers any more than you can pigeonhole the coupon people, them. I'm part of them. But like I said, there is this average of $70,000 a year is the average coupon user.
Let's go back to the phones. Marcia is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Marcia.
Good morning.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm a senior citizen on a very limited income, and the idea of using coupons just doesn't work for me, because coupons are for items I don't use. I don't eat sugared cereals. I don't eat frozen pizza. I don't drink carbonated beverages. And the things that coupons are out there for are things that are just not healthy food for me. Mm-hmm. And the idea of spending money to save money is really artificial. If you don't use the item or need the item, the real way to save the money is to not spend it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Well, yeah. And we did talk earlier about how, of course, the manufacturers are trying to manipulate you. I'm sure there are many times that you've come home with items that you would not have bought mm-hmm. without a coupon.
Yes. I think I would say to anybody who, when you say it's not for healthy food, start looking at the coupons that are on the packages, because that's where you're going to see the coupons, like you might on the spray butter, you might see a coupon for $2 off produce, or on another item you might see for $2 off hamburger. You might see different kinds of coupons if you start looking on the on package, or they call them peelies because you're peeling them off the package, or hang tags because they're hanging on the package. Start looking at those coupons, and that might save you some money in things, the healthier foods or the things that you might be purchasing anyway.
Well, and with the Catalina coupons, the ones that print out at the register, I do see and occasionally use, although usually I don't mm-hmm. remember to, use those, because when I buy something that I do use, then I will get a coupon for a related product or the same product.
Right. Especially, like, you might think Walgreens is a little more expensive than your grocery store for, like, health and beauty products. I say, who doesn't use toothpaste? Who doesn't use shampoo? Those are more things that you could save money on. And if you're watching the Walgreens ads or some of your drugstore ads, you will see that one week it might be some shampoo that has a what I call a Catalina coupon, because that's the machine. It's called a Catalina machine, but it might be register rewards at one store and something else at another, some rewards program. Then you get out the $2. You might use a coupon on that product. You get the $2 back at the register. Yes, you have to go back within 2 weeks, but then you can use it. Most of those stores sell eggs. They sell milk. So you might be using it on something like that.
Lydia on Facebook. Well, first, this is a funny thing, because we've had a huge discussion at Iowa Public Radio today, and Mary and I were talking about it off the air. She first of all wants to clear up the pronunciation of coupon or coupon. She says it's driving me crazy, and people say it each way.
Yes, it's either way. You'll hear it a lot of time on television as coupon. I've always said coupon. Most of the people I know who coupon, it's coupon. But either way, it's fine. There is no rule.
All right. But she also wants to know if there's a coupon phone app recommendation, because, of course, coupons have gone high tech.
Yes, they have. Unfortunately, there's people like me who go kicking and screaming into the social medias. But I'm on Facebook, but I do not have the phone. So my book does list several phone apps. That, I mean, I have a phone, but it's one of those cheap little phones. So I do list several phone.
You probably had a coupon for.
Phone,
right?
Yes. I do list several phone apps in the back of my book that have been highly recommended. With those kinds of coupons, often you're only getting it on one item. So you've got the coupon on your phone. And yes, you can get a coupon. You can get like a dollar off one box of toothpaste. But for people who are a little obsessed with it, that might not be that appealing, because you want 10 boxes free, not just one.
All right. And you've got Coupon Cabin, Coupon mm-hmm. Sherpa, Foursquare does coupons. You have a long list here mm-hmm. of different coupon apps that you can download
yes.
on a smartphone. How do you feel about customer loyalty cards?
Oh, get them. Whatever store you're in. I'm not saying the credit cards. I am saying the customer loyalty cards. Yes, I have a huge stack in my purse. And you can find it. They have them for on your keychain, too. So it's not quite so bulky. But I don't care what store it is. If they're offering you one, you take it, because they're going to send you, especially if you sign up with your email, they're going to send you coupons in your email. Just set up an email address separately from your personal email or your business email, just for all this coupon stuff or all these ads or whatever it is you're replying to. And you will get coupons in your email, and you will save money at the store. And there are sometimes sales just for the people with the card. But don't sign up for the credit cards, just their rewards cards. But I always say, yes, sign up for them.
All right. Well, you write in your book about how researching all of this has changed your behavior a little bit. But one of the particular parts of your practice that really changed through your research is the buying and selling of coupons, because in the past you had bought other
yes,
people's
I
coupons.
Did. What did you think somebody would do who would dig in the dumpsters for candy wrappers or dig in the recycling center for coupons? Of course, they would want to buy coupons on eBay or buy coupons through these coupon clipping services. But the more I got into digging into the fraud aspect of it, it didn't feel like I was doing something fraudulent in buying them, but I started to become a little uncomfortable with it because the coupon says right on it not to be bought or sold. And so I thought, well, how are they getting past this? They're calling it a coupon clipping service. And that makes sense. Somebody else is clipping the coupon for you, you know, 5 cents, 10 cents clipping service. But if it's a $5 off coupon and versus a $1 off coupon, and they're charging 50 cents for the $5 off coupon and 10 cents for the $1 off coupon, why does it cost more to clip that $5 coupon? So I started getting a little uncomfortable with that. Plus, what I did is I went on eBay and I searched under free coupon, and I found hundreds of listings of coupons that I knew had to be fraudulent, because there's no way anybody could legitimately get that many free coupons. And plus, the TLC Extreme Couponing Show actually had coupon fraud on it. There was two people particularly that had done used fraudulent coupons. So then I got really uncomfortable. So yes, I do not buy coupons any longer.
All right. And you also are very clear about calling this a hobby. Mm-hmm. And I mean, clearly it's a way of saving money. But for you, it was more than that and is more than that.
For over 30 years, it was a lifestyle. It was a lifestyle of, especially during the refund years. And it was a lifestyle that my husband shared and my children shared. And it's not like I forced them to share it. But it was a part of our life. My husband and I would go shopping a couple times a month and have these free sprees. And he didn't know what I was doing, but he was so proud of me because I would come home with all these bags full of stuff. But then he passed away. And all of a sudden, I didn't know if I wanted to be a part of that lifestyle because I didn't have my shopping buddy with me. You know, so, but yeah, I would say it was a lifestyle for us.
I'm talking with Mary Potter Kenyon. She is the author of Coupon Crazy, The Science, The Savings, and The Stories Behind America's Extreme Obsession. We're going to take a short break, and marketing expert John Murray will join us. We're going to talk about the allure of warehouse shopping and some of the other ways that stores manipulate us into buying their stuff. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we've been talking about using coupons. And coupons, of course, are just one way that retailers and manufacturers try to get our attention. They also arrange stores just the right way. They paint the walls the right color. They play the right kind of music. So why is it that so many of us spend so much money in stores that don't do any of that? Warehouse stores like Costco and Sam's Club are wildly popular now. To help us understand the allure of these stores and other ways that stores manipulate us, John Murray is here now. He is an associate professor of marketing at the University of Iowa. Hello, John.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And Mary Potter Kenyon is staying with us, author of the book Coupon Crazy, The Science, The Savings, and Stories Behind America's Extreme Obsession. And you are welcome to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100. And I explained to Mary during the break that I'm not a coupon person, but these warehouse stores are such a weakness for me. And I know that they're not saving me money because I know I spend more money when I shop there than I would if I didn't shop there. What do they do to us, John, when we walk in there? Why do we feel so free to spend?
Well, there's obviously very different kinds of warehouse stores. You know, you can talk about a store like Walmart, which will basically be positioning itself on its everyday low price across almost everything it sells. You also will have stores like IKEA, another big box store. IKEA, on the other hand, works very hard to create an experience when you go into the store, which makes shopping fun, you know, stimulating. And
you have to stay on the certain path to make it through the store.
Right, exactly. And you're walking through envisioning your life as it might be if you had this room in your own home. Or you turn around and look at a store like Costco. And Costco has about a fourth of its inventory, which it does not regularly devote to particular product items. And so they create sort of a treasure hunting expedition where you go through and you're looking for that wonderful deal. And it could be something very expensive. It could be Dom Perignon. It could be – I saw that they recently sold a diamond ring for almost $250,000, you know. But it was probably considerably lower price than what you could have found at a local jewelry store. So it's really no one model, I think, that you could look to say right. big boxes are successful for this reason.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Costco and Sam's Club because they're pretty comparable. And they are stores that don't do anything to dress up the environment. I mean, you do walk in and you are certainly in a warehouse. What are some of the things that they do to draw your attention to certain items and make you notice things because they're not using the fancy kind of displays that we're used to seeing in other retailers?
Sure. Well, I think Sam's Clubs are basically an extension of the Walmart philosophy. They're going to carry a very broad range of items. They're going to have some variety in terms of the number of different kinds of versions of the items that they carry. But what they're doing is stepping up the size of the items. So you're going to get huge packages of cookies and huge packages of or jars of mayonnaise and whatever else it happens to be. Costco is a very different kind of model. They're going to still sell larger. They're going to have fewer versions of a product. They're going to have a variety that will surprise you. And so they're going to try to create a shopping experience that makes it enjoyable to go to Costco. You're almost looking for their loyal customers are almost looking for an excuse to get over there to find out what they have.
Right.
And they have a much larger actual ticket, average ticket sale than what Sam's Club has because of these unplanned purchases. But they're really sort of not totally unplanned because that's why they go there. So you've got to remember the entertainment value that comes with this as well as the ability to come home and tell their friends about the deal and everything else that's involved in it.
And then that feeling of triumph that we were talking about earlier when we were talking about using coupons. With the loyalty, I mean, it can't be just the experience. Maybe it is just the experience. To hook people, does it tend to be there's – one expensive item that you would always depend on that you can find there for significantly less? Is that sort of the way this relationship starts?
I think the relationship probably starts on a recommendation from a friend. And so you have a friend who has a very positive experience, and that leads you to go into the store. I think the stores are working hard to try to create ongoing reasons for you to come back. And so, for example, Costco has its own brand. And so they try to position this as being at least close to a premium brand, but it's being sold at a high discount relative to normal premium brands. And so what they're trying to do is get you loyal to their brand because that brand can't be purchased anywhere else. And so when they do that, they give you a reason to come back there to buy their products.
And Mary, as a couponer, how do you feel about these warehouse shopping experiences? Obviously, you care about saving money.
Well, I've only been in a Sam's Club, and all I could say is it's so big. And I don't want anybody making me buy 30 Hot Pockets or 40 cookies unless I'm getting them free. So maybe it's the fact that I had – like I said, it's so big. Mm-hmm. Everything's so big. That's all I said to my kids. This is so big. This is so big. The carts are so big. Everything's so big. And I didn't like that. So I might not be the right person to ask because I haven't had that much experience with the big stores. Like when he's talking about Costco, that sounds kind of interesting, the things he said about hunting and treasure hunt for the good deals. That kind of interests me. So, but like I said, I don't want anybody making me buy 30 of something at the same time unless I'm getting it free.
All right. Jason is on the line from Coralville. Hi, Jason.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I was just wondering, earlier you had talked about, what the average couponer was. I was wondering if there had actually been any studies or done on sort of the psychology of that. Are people who are deeply into couponing, are they more likely to have obsessive compulsive traits or be gamblers or, they seem to get a stronger reward from the coupon than other people do.
What do you think about that, Mary?
I want a government grant so I can study that because that was the question I had when I started this book. Why? Why does somebody get so excited about free? Why me and not my 9 siblings? We grew up in the same house. So it was the why behind there. So I don't mind if the government wants to give me a grant to study that. I think that would be fun.
All right. So, Jason, we don't know the answer to that yet. I want to talk about another way that stores and pretty much every store does this, manipulate us. And that's through sales. And different stores have different sales strategies. But can you give us some insight into some of those different strategies, John?
Well, let me start by saying, maybe it's because I'm a business professor, but I would not say successful stores manipulate customers. I think successful stores are manipulated by customers. And so when we talk about wanting to go to a store like a Costco, you're going there because that's the kind of store you want to be in. You know what the deal is before you go. When you go to Walmart, it's the kind of store you want to be in. You know, they're successful because they're giving you what you want. And so the idea of manipulation sounds sort of interesting, and maybe on a radio show this is going to be interesting to a lot of our audience to frame it that way, but I don't think businesses think that they're manipulating. They think they're trying to create an atmosphere that the customer is going to want, and therefore they're going to respond positively to. Now, that being said, you know, they certainly do run sales, and you know, things like positioning within the store, whether you put an item on an end cap, or do you put an intrusive display that they have to walk around in. Where do you put that item? You know, do you put the item in the back of the store?
Clearance racks are always in the back.
Exactly. So you see everything full priced on your way to the back. But you have to remember that these stores are operating on very slim profit margins. You know, so if you take a look at a store that's operating on a maybe 5%, 10% profit margin, and then you start looking at a 30% discount, what you're really meaning is that at least on that item, if they were to sell every item at that price, they'd be losing money. And so stores are very specific in terms of when they want to do discounts. And in general, I strongly encourage people to, at least my clients on the consulting side and my students, to avoid discounting as much as possible. You know, if you take a 1% discount, you typically have to sell 10% more to make up for that. Take a 10% discount, and you're going to have to sell, you know, almost 100% more for that. You know, so it's a very, very difficult relationship.
So can you make up for it in volume?
Exactly. So what you do is you use discounting selectively. You're going to discount in order to, for example, bring new users into your category. You're going to discount to move excess volume. You're going to discount to on a new product to gain trial. But the people who use the coupon the most are usually the people who are willing to pay full price for your product. And so you need to be very, very careful, because what will occur is that you'll get a bump in sales. But then in the following period, you're going to drop off. And in the end, you sell the same number of units, but you've sold them at a lower average margin per unit.
Interesting. Well, I always feel this tension, and I'm not someone who enjoys shopping, so maybe this tension is why. But I always feel the tension between what the store wants and what I want. Because, of course, I want a product at the lowest price possible. The store wants me to buy the product at the highest price possible. So there is that constant tension.
Sure. Sure, that's a natural part of our economy, you know. And so when you find, and if you don't believe that store is providing you with the maximum value, then what you're going to do is head down the road to find a different store. And so what occurs is that profit maximizing companies, when you look at them as a whole across our economy, given that we can have a whole bunch of them competing hard, end up maximizing our own welfare as consumers. But that tension is a natural and important part of our economy operating efficiently.
You mentioned the everyday low prices of a Walmart. And one of the things that you find when you're shopping at a Walmart is that on every shelf, probably 15 times on that shelf, there is a little card that says everyday low price. How much of an impact does signage like that have in making people feel like they're getting a good deal, even when they're not necessarily?
I think it combines with many things. So, you know, that combined with the large warehouse feel to it, you know, you don't want it to look luxurious because, you know, you're competing on a low price. They're using lots of different kinds of cues. Mary mentioned the large shopping basket. You know, a very large shopping basket is another important thing to – You don't want people to feel like, oh, I've got a lot of stuff, you know, in here. So there's a lot of different kinds of cues people are that they're using. One of the critical things, though, is that, you know, I think that we tend to buy things that we had a propensity to want to have anyway. And so we're marketing oftentimes, and these in-store things tactics are operating is at the margin. You don't go in and buy something because it said an everyday low price and you thought that was attractive if you didn't really want it. And so what it can do is push you over the edge. And that's where oftentimes I think that even the problems occur, because if you get pushed over the edge too often, then, you know, obviously you could have issues with budgets and
right.
those kind of things for
well,
consumers.
Well, and the impulse purchase has to be a very important part of business.
It is. But, again, it depends on the category. You know, very rarely do you go out and do impulse purchasing on a product like bath tissue. You know, that's not going to be something you'll impulse buy. You will, on the other hand, probably buy the majority of your batteries on impulse because you forget to put them on a list. And so you put them up close to the front of the store, and people buy that item based on on seeing it. And so impulse buying is very, very common, but it, again, is something that you actually you typically understand the products that are impulse purchased, and then you try to locate those in the store in places where you can facilitate that occurring.
Well, and a lot of us, I speak as a parent, a lot of my impulse purchases are made at the request of my children, because it's not something that I saw, it's not something that I went in the store thinking about, but there may be a compelling reason to buy, or maybe I'm just weak. But
right.
But when stores arrange displays, is the eye level of children taken into account?
Certainly. I mean, if you go to the grocery stores, you don't find granola on the bottom shelf. You know, there's a reason for that. You know, that you're going to find that the children's cereals located at eye level for the children. And again, what you have is a situation where the children are going to show it to you. And then if it's something you really didn't think your child should have, most people will say no. You know, so what it is an issue of then, should I give in to them because of either they're going to have a fit or because I want to give my child a treat.
Right. But certainly that's something that the stores are thinking about.
Certainly.
As well. And Mary, you've actually consulted with retailers, giving them some insight into the lifestyle of couponers as well, right?
Well, I think, like when he said the average couponer, I need to talk to marketers. Because when he said the average couponer is going to use a coupon, something they would buy anyway, uh-uh.
Really?
No. Not these obsessed people. And I call them these obsessed people, and I'm one of them, or I was one of them. But Groupon kind of proved that, because the Groupon coupons, which they found 32% of the people who were putting on these Groupon offers found out these people are operating with surgical precision, is what they said. They are not coming back in here, and they're buying the Groupon, so they're getting this really cheap, good deal, but they're not coming back in and shopping. What's going on? Because they thought they'd bring them in here, they'd get them, and they would come back, and they would pay full price. And I'm thinking, no, they won't. We will pay $20 for your $60 offer, but we will not pay $60 for your $60 offer later. You know, so there's been some snafus, I would say, in the marketing.
Well, and it sounds like there's this subset of the extreme couponers, and then there are the people who use coupons.
And I'm not
casually.
Sure. And I'm not sure the businesses and the marketers understand the obsessed segment of the population, because they've made some mistakes that show they do not.
We
understand.
Typically call it the deal prone segment.
The deal prone.
It's very hard to make money on the deal prone segment, and what you have to be careful of is selling to the deal prone segment and giving your margin away on all the rest of the customers who are willing to pay more.
Interesting. Well, it's another place where tension exists and probably always will. John Murray, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
John Murray is an associate professor of marketing at the University of Iowa. And Mary Kenyon, thank you.
Thank you.
Mary Potter Kenyon is the author of Coupon Crazy, The Science, the Savings, and the Stories Behind America's Extreme Obsession. She also writes a couponing column for the Dubuque Herald. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Also, Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime. We're interested in your thoughts about things you've heard on the show. We love to hear your suggestions for things you would like to hear on the show. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow, it's Horticulture Day, and it's the best time of the year to reseed your lawn. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.